Let's do some guests of honor now. The first one of them is the fan guest of honor. Strictly speaking, he is a professional of sorts since he writes for a living. Every day he writes the Hagerstown Times-Herald Journal Express, which is their newspaper. It's 32 pages. He starts page one with the national news, the rapes, the weather forecast, and all the rest, and continues right through to the sports and the financial stuff on page 32. And then he goes home and writes letters of comment to fanzines. He's also written some science fiction stories, and not lately, and had them professionally published, even as many others of us. He has the reputation in fandom of being rather a nice guy. Sweet, gentle, something of a trial for a toastmaster like myself, whose style depends on a certain sharpness of approach. But I've done a lot of research on Harry Warner, and I can tell you that none of it's true. Sam Moskowitz filled me in on all the details. The strange sexual practices, the whips and chains, the youthful membership in the Communist Party not quite repented, the thefts of Frank R. Paul illustrations from the primitive auctions of the world conventions of the late 1920s. He's really had a checkered career, and he's been fooling us all lately. Sam is now working on the definitive biography of Harry Warner, and as soon as he clears it with his lawyer, it will be published in the next issue of Science Fiction Plus. Harry Warner, fan guest of honor, a really important figure in the history of science fiction fandom, a man who has published one fanzine continuously through the Fantasy Amateur Press Association since, I think, 1941 or 1942, who prior to that published another fanzine that is considered one of the greats, Spaceways, who has provided historical continuity through his monumental history of fandom from 1912 through 1922, All Our Yesterdays. He's working on later volumes now. Harry Warner, Jr.
Bob Silverberg has learned to do two things in the last 10 years. He's learned to write some tremendous science fiction stories, and he's learned to write and to tell some tremendous lies about me. This is not going to be a very long talk. If you read Bob Tucker's introduction to All Our Yesterdays, you know that I'm not much of a talker. And there's another reason for making it a short talk. I'm directing it only to part of the people in this room. Just to the people who want the nation to continue its space program. If the comments I've been reading in fanzines are a good indicator, not more than perhaps 50 or 60% of all fans and professionals are solidly behind continued exploration of space. But I think that group could have a major impact on the nation's future course. We thought we were on the threshold of space travel a decade ago when the first orbital missions were flown. Now it's obvious that we've come to a crossroads before we're very far past that threshold. As things now stand, the United States won't be continuing to explore the moon systematically, or setting up a permanent colony there, or training astronauts for the first human landing on Mars for many, many years to come. If we do limit the space program to experiments in orbit around Earth, one of two things will happen, either of which would be bad. All humanity might stay cooped up on one planet until pollution or catastrophe or war makes the planet uninhabitable. Or another nation might go ahead with a space program of its own and move so far ahead in technology that the establishment of this nation will suddenly become panicky and belligerent over its number two status. I think a time for a decision on space may be at hand. A national election occurs next year. Peace could come in Vietnam before the election. A lot of decisions about national policies, such as space travel, could come up in the months just ahead. If only half the people in fandom and protom want us to keep on going in space, and if they expressed their opinion in the right ways, it might have an impact on national policy. I doubt if half of all the people in fandom gave a damn about Star Trek, but those who cared were responsible in part for keeping an imaginary spaceship going for another year or two. About 10% of all the professional people in science fiction were responsible for turning a specialized kind of fiction for boys into a significant branch of adult literature. I'd like to see if pros and fans who back the nation's space program can keep it going. Most lobbyists for space flight are directly interested in making money out of it. Science fiction people are interested in space not for personal gain, but because it's so closely bound up with their main interests. You can write to your congressman, or you could publish a fanzine favoring an all-out space program, or you could simply talk up space on street corners. Just remember, 2 summers ago, most of us got pretty badly worked up when we saw a man take his first step on the surface of the moon. It's quite possible that next year we'll see man take his last step on the moon for a generation or two. I'd like to see science fiction people do what they can to prevent that from happening. Thank you.
Harry, we thank you for that somewhat somber but important reminder. We have here for you, so that you do not let this occasion slip your mind, a flat Yugo of sorts. It's a glittering plaque that says Harry Warner Jr., fan guest of honor, NorrisCon, 1971. I would have gone on now to the 1932 Yugos, but the voting's not finished. The other guest of honor, Clifford D. Simak. This is really a tough business tonight, giving me two guys like this to introduce, because Clifford D. Simak is the Harry Warner Jr. of prodom. I mean, he's a benevolent man. He exudes goodness and the milk of human kindness. And it is really a challenge to say something unkind or even barbed about Cliff Simak. I'm going to try, but... He's also a newspaper man. He works for the Minneapolis Bugle, which is published in a limited hectographed edition in St. Paul. He is the silage and sorghums columnist. A few years ago, Barbara and I were out in the Twin Cities, and we called on Cliff's office, saw him in his function as journalist. He was off in the corner there pushing computer buttons and making things dance and hop. And he showed us how great city newspaper is run. It's all done by mirrors and lies and imagination. And then we went out to dinner, and Cliff told us anecdotes about the editors he has dealt with in his nearly 40 years as a science fiction editor. And, pals, I just can't repeat those stories, not in front of a mixed audience. You think Cliff Simak is saintly, don't you? You think he is a sweet, kindly... Well, let me tell you. Behind this facade of mild humanitarian benevolence, there lurks, an Asimov in disguise. a gray-haired, beaming Ellison hammering to get out. I mean, don't take him at face value. When he writes these kindly old stories that begin with the line like Sam Jones was sitting on his front porch in the wheelchair, Beware, because there's a barb in the tail of the story somewhere. It's not as folksy as it sounds. Cliff Simak began writing science fiction somewhere around the time Isaac reached puberty and has continued ever since, picking up acclaim and Hugo's and a great deal of money along the way. A book called City, which is probably out of print now because that's the way things happen in this business. One of the undying classics of science fiction. If any list of the 20 science fiction novels were drawn up, it would have to have City on it. He wrote a bunch of other stuff too. Maybe you've read it. According to the checklist in the program booklet, most of that is out of print too. I think Cliff should have a long talk with his publishers. Although he does date as a writer from the Gernsback era, believe it or not, he's one of those rare birds who has managed to stay with it, to evolve, to remain active and alert, and still a cherished contributor to science fiction here in his fourth or fifth decade among us as a writer. And long overdue, he has been chosen tonight as our professional guest of honor. Clifford D. Simak.
Thank you, Bob, for all the nice things you said about me. Mr. and Mrs. Lewis, Mr. and Mrs. Silverberg, Mr. Warner, distinguished guests and members of the committee, ladies and gentlemen, I am deeply appreciative of the honor of standing here tonight. Thank you for having me. Of late years, there have been some derogatory things said of science fiction. Tonight, I propose to say some decent things about it. And in speaking of science fiction, I should emphasize, perhaps, that under the heading, I also include fantasy, sword and sorcery, and any other category into which the field may be splintered. I have heard it said that science fiction has lost its sense of wonder, that too many bad stories are being written, that much of it is unreadable. I think that people who say these things may be basing their judgments on too shallow a perspective. In some cases, it may be their bias rather than their critical judgment that comes into play. To make such a judgment, it seems to me that we should take the long view, that we should go back to the early 30s and take a closer look at what has happened in our field. Let us go back to the days of the mad scientist, to the time of the bug-eyed monster, to the era of the man-eating plant. From such a position in the past and looking forward to the present day, I would venture that any fair-minded observer would be willing to admit that we had chalked up some progress. But you say, there was a sense of wonder then. I grant you that. We were starry-eyed in those days. It was all so new and wonderful, and we were very young. The sense of wonder, my friends, was never in the stories, but only in ourselves. It is we, tired and jaded from having read so much, who have lost the sense of wonder. I have never raised a question, but I would guess that even now, the sense of wonder still exists among those young readers who may have been newly introduced to science fiction. And the bad stories? What about those, you ask? Aside from the fact that whether a story is bad or good is a matter of personal taste and critical judgment, and applying only a crude rule of thumb criterion, if you look back to the beginning of modern science fiction, you will realize there have always been bad stories. I am quite willing to admit that I have written more than my fair share of them. There isn't a writer here tonight who hasn't a few stories to his credit that he'd be happy to forget. Science fiction in this wise is no different than any other type of fiction. If you don't believe me, read some of Faulkner's early efforts and some of Hemingway's, not to mention Fitzgerald and many others. I would hazard a guess that if a panel of competent critics were to make a survey of science fiction through the years, they would find far more praiseworthy pieces of fiction writing in the last few years than in any previous period, and that does not exclude the so-called golden age of science fiction. And when you get around to those unreadable stories, you must not lose sight of the fact that whether a story is readable or unreadable depends entirely upon the person reading it. This is an extremely nebulous area in which to make a judgment. I will mention no names or titles, for I should be ashamed to. But I must confess that for me there are certain stories that are unreadable. The horrible thing about this is that some of them have been critically acclaimed as masterpieces. No doubt they are, but I still can't read them. And yet, I consider that it would be impudent and perhaps even a little stupid of me to go about proclaiming them as unreadable. Aside from all of this, I see many hopeful signs for science fiction, and I think that they should not be overlooked. A number of new writers who have entered the field in recent years gives me considerable hope that the old tradition, forged back in the 30s and 40s, will not only be carried on, but enriched and strengthened. This gives me more satisfaction than I can possibly express, for it means that something that old-timers like Edmond Hamilton and Jack Williamson and many others helped to build will rise to greater heights than any of us could have dreamed back in the days of the far beginning. It also makes me think that there must be something viable and vital in the field to attract such talent. The one thing that has been most attractive about science fiction through the years is that it has provided a framework in which a writer can say certain things he wants to say and to a better advantage than in any other form of writing. It is a forum for ideas, and it is essential that it attract new talent if it is to continue in this function. Another encouraging aspect of recent years is the emergence of a fairly large body of responsible critical assessment. In years past, we had only a few critical voices. Today, we have a score or more. And as the years go on, there's reason to believe this number will grow. I take this to mean that the body of literature we have developed finally has been judged competent of critical notice. For a writing form that had such humble beginnings to achieve such notice, triumph. Tied in with this critical assessment has been the acceptance that has been given science fiction in our schools, both at the high school and college level. If our work is adjudged of a value that makes it acceptable in the classroom, we may be well content that it indeed has made some progress. I regard also as hopeful the evidence in the last few years that the field has the capability of responding to evolutionary ferment. When any endeavor, be it literature, politics, economic, engineering, or science, becomes frozen in a status quo beyond which its practitioners fear to move, that endeavor has reached a dead end. I think we have rather recently demonstrated we have reached no dead end. A few years ago, there was a great controversy and a fierce outcry over the so-called new wave writing. I am not entirely sure, even now, I know what the new wave was or is. I think I know something about it, but probably I fail of complete understanding. I do not think complete understanding is necessary to see what has happened or may still be happening. I may be wrong, but it seems to me that the new wave has become, or is in the process of becoming, a very important part of science fiction. Our field of writing seems to have had the capacity to absorb and offer a place to this new way of writing, being made the richer for it without in any way being forced to give up the old traditional and basic values. We were faced by a change and accepted it and made it a part of us. In somewhat less spectacular fashion, science fiction in the past has responded to changes, and some sure instinct in us has always managed to make these changes an improvement while the basic spirit of the literary form was retained. Back in the late 30s, the old format was replaced by more naturalistic writing. Sometime in the middle 40s or thereabouts, we began to write about politics, economics, ethics, and other matters that had not before been given room in the old format. And while these changes stand out sharply in my mind, there were, as the years went on, other changes just as significant. The point is that science fiction has been and still is flexible, and within that flexibility lies its greatest promise. There's just one thing further that I would like to say. I say it with all the goodwill in the world. I am well aware that controversy, representing many points of view, is a healthy thing. When we no longer hold differing viewpoints, we will tend to become complacent and may no longer care, and our field in consequence will suffer. But there are times when I am somewhat distressed at the shrillness of some of the controversy. I could wish for the good. I could wish for the good of all of us, the discussions might be carried on in a quieter voice and somewhat more reasonably. The field is large, and there's room for all of us and for each of our personal viewpoints. There is no overriding urgency for any of us to feel the necessity to convert all the rest of us to our way of thinking. I know that to many of you tonight, my few decent words about science fiction may seem too simplistic. I have stated the obvious, but no one else had seemed about to do it. My affair with science fiction has been a long and devoted one, and in recent times I have cringed at some of the things that have been said of it. What I have said here tonight, I have felt for a long time badly needed saying. Thank you for listening.
A good man. He's a pretty good writer, too, but we have a lot of good writers. Good men are in shorter supply. He's okay.